Now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution with your host, Michael B.
Weekend is upon us, and that is all that counts. I got a hilarious audio from that whack job, President-elect Macron. How do they say merde in French? Merde? The guy's full of merde. That's what they should name him. It's really hilarious. Obviously, France is not too happy with us that Donald Trump, which to me is the best move he's made so far in getting us out of the Paris Climate Summit. I'm going to get into that. But before I start, I was inspired on Facebook today when I saw a quote from Thomas Jefferson. And the quote goes like this: "And can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God, that they are not to be violated, but with His wrath? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that His justice cannot sleep forever." You see, folks, our founding fathers were very pious and religious men. Okay, they were. And I think Monday, I've got this great website that I've used many times over the years from Wall Builders, and which is great because we really need a wall on our southern border, and I'll get to that later on. The founding fathers built this country on our Judeo-Christian values. And what this quote is saying here is that we lose our security and we lose our freedoms when we twist the minds of our fellow Americans that this country was built on God's favor. The Constitution and the Declaration of the United States were definitely inspired by the Judeo-Christian Bible. That cannot be disputed. But atheists and other Christian haters would like to tell you differently. And they would like to tell you that those ideals are antiquated and they're archaic and that we've evolved into something better. That God has no place in our country's fabric anymore and that we can make our own decisions. Well, the Bible clearly says, do not rely on your own thoughts and convictions, and I'm paraphrasing naturally, but rely on the Word of God. And of course, the evidence is crystal clear. And I've got this great book, and maybe I'll make a show around it, later on, someday. It's called Church and State in American History by Wilson Drakeman. And this book details how gradually the left wing, the liberals, which is an oxymoron in itself because they're anything but liberal, slowly got the word of God out of our country and what it has done to our society, I don't think that it can really be argued that American society is on the downturn. We have a massive divided families, broken families. We have the highest rate of depression and suicides and overall unhappiness than we've ever had before. Pornography is a multi-billion dollar industry. And again, you know, I'm not like really too concerned about people's expression privately, you know, in their own homes and what have you. But when it pours into mainstream society, we have a problem. So we as a country have forgotten, and we've been brainwashed to not give thanks to God for this wonderful country and the wonderful principles that this country was founded upon. We've forgotten all about that. And now, if you're a Christian walking around in America, you could have some problems in areas, which is why I say to my fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, wear your cross out from your shirt or your blouse. Wear it loud and wear it proud. Let them know that we are many and we are here to stay. So I always wear my cross out wherever I go. Let people know who my God is. So, and what Jefferson is saying in that quote also is that the liberties that have been bestowed upon us through God's word, the Bible, and the Constitution, no man should violate those liberties, only God should. And of course, he's talking about, you know, Armageddon, the wrath of God, and perhaps Revelation, and all of that stuff. And what Jefferson is also saying at the end, indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. What he's saying there is that we're going to get our comeuppance if we continue down a path of violating our core tenets that made America great. And, you know, it doesn't take the finger of God literally doing something cataclysmic. We will meet God's wrath of our own device. We will be saved or condemned by our own actions. God doesn't have to send brimstone and fire like the story of Sodom and Gomorrah to destroy us. That's not necessary. We will destroy ourselves. And naturally, as a society becomes more perverted, more aberrant, loose, promiscuous, disrespectful, apathetic, it will naturally destroy itself. There's nothing for God to do on a supernatural basis. We will take care of that naturally. And that's all really Jefferson has to say. He's not really being prophetic here. He's just speaking the inevitable. And, you know, in regards to church and state, mentioning that book, anti-Christians, and in turn, really, anti-Americans, love to throw in this church, separation of church and state business, which they think is in the Constitution. Well, nothing can be further from the truth. Actually, it's the exact opposite of what Thomas Jefferson meant in his letter to the Danbury Baptist, written in 1802, which I'm going to read, and also the notion in the First Amendment says nothing about removing God from government. Actually, it's the opposite, and I'm going to read this. This comes from BillOfRightsInstitute.org. Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to a Baptist church from Danbury, Connecticut, in which he explained his beliefs about federalism and the meaning of the Establishment Clause. Jefferson did not address the subject of state-sponsored churches, but assured the congregation that the federal government could not interfere with their church or offer special favors to any particular sect. Now, what is a sect? A sect is a division thereof. So, as you know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of sects in the Christianity umbrella. You got the Catholics, the Baptists, the Presbyterians, and so forth. What Jefferson is saying is that the government couldn't show favor to the Presbyterians and then not to the Baptists. It's that simple. Jefferson wrote, quote, "I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Clearly, what that means is that the state cannot, number one, create a church of the United States. And they were motivated to create this clause because of what the Pilgrims left. They left the Church of England. Why was the Church of England created? I believe it was King Henry VIII, or one of those Henrys. There were many of them. His wife at the time could not produce a male heir. And of course, back then, before chromosomes and X and Ys and all that good stuff weren't thoroughly understood back then, it was easy for the man to blame the woman. So King Henry went to the Pope, who was very strong in Western Europe at the time. He asked for an annulment. The Pope refused. So King Henry decided to break away from the Catholic Church, dismissed the Catholic bishops, and created the Church of England, where divorce came easy. And I think he went through a couple of women, and then I believe he never got his male heir, because, as science later revealed, it's up to the man. If you ain't got the Y, you ain't getting the stem on the apple. That's just the way it is. It has nothing to do with what the woman does. So the Pilgrims left, and of course there was a lot of persecution. If you didn't go along with the Church of England, you had a problem. So that is what inspired the Founding Fathers to create this Establishment Clause, that there would be no Church of the United States. So that addresses the Establishment Clause. Now, there will be no law prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Exactly. The government could not impose its will to stop your expression of your religion. Nowhere in here does it say that religion could not be, or faith could not be expressed within the halls of government buildings, the White House, the Capitol building, where they do morning prayers, and a whole bunch of other things. Nowhere in there does it say that. The wall that he's talking about, separating from church and state, means the state cannot infringe upon one's faith. It does not mean that faith is excluded from government. That's exactly what that means. But the left would like to twist that into saying that God and Jesus Christ have no place in our government, and faith has no place in rendering our laws, which is incorrect. Because when you take God out of the equation, what do you have? You have a moralless and an ethically inferior society. Because now man thinks he can do whatever he wants to do without any eternal consequence, which is a fallacy. So I felt that needed to be addressed. The separation of church and state stops government aggression against the church or against faith. It does not exclude faith from being an influence on how our government treats its people. So that needs to be clear. However, something else needs to be clear, and I don't think that the founding fathers ever saw Satanism or Islam encroaching our country to destroy the fabric thereof. I think that they were a little naive. They probably never imagined, fast forwarding 215 years after this letter was written, the founding fathers probably never envisioned that Christianity and the very foundations of our country, the Constitution, would be under such attack. And they probably should have expanded that clause saying, yeah, the separation of church and state. However, when a religious ideology comes into our country that is antithetical to the foundations thereof, that religion or ideology is not protected under the First Amendment. That is where, if they fell short anywhere on the Establishment Clause and in the First Amendment, that's where they fell short. Because that needs to be expanded. Islam and Satanism have no place in the United States of America. Look at what European atheism did to Europe. Caused a lot of problems. And thus, it was brought over here. Look at what Islam is doing to Western Europe again. This is the jihad. This is the crusade part two. Except the leaders of Europe, and quite frankly, and we'll see if President Trump will be different, all the leaders of the world seem to be lying down to this and being very passive. The picture of my show for today is a picture of Paris totally besieged by Muslims. And President-elect Macron, I'm going to play his audio, makes a royal ass of himself. When I'll address that after. I'm going to play the audio. I'm not going to interrupt it. I think it's hilarious. The guy is a freaking hack and a copycat. And France has really embarrassed themselves with not electing Marine Le Pen and putting in this idiot. This is going to be like GW, only in French. So let's go to Monsieur Macron.
Today, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, announced his decision to withdraw the United States from the Paris Agreement. I do respect this decision, but I do think it is an actual mistake, both for the US and for our planet. I just said President Trump in a few words a few minutes ago, this assessment. Tonight, I wish to tell the United States France believes in you. The world believes in you. I know that you are a great nation. I know your history, our common history. To all scientists, engineers, entrepreneurs, responsible citizens who were disappointed by the decision of the President of the United States, I want to say that they will find in France a second homeland. I call on them, come and work here with us, to work together on concrete solutions for our climate, our environment. I can assure you, France will not give up the fight. I reaffirm clearly that the Paris Agreement remains irreversible and will be implemented not just by France, but by all the other nations. Over the coming hours, I will have the opportunity to speak with our main partners to define a common strategy and to launch new initiatives. I already know that I can count on them. I call on you to remain confident. We will succeed because we are fully committed. Because wherever we live, whoever we are, we all share the same responsibility. Make our planet great again.
Make your planet great again. Are you kidding me? The guy can't even come up with his own catchphrase. He couldn't even come up with his own girlfriend. He had to have an affair with his high school teacher, and the woman left you know, her husband for him, and you know, the chick's like twice his age. Make the world great again. All right, on a serious note, how can France make the world great again when their country is being absolutely destroyed from within? And they're voluntarily destroying it. How is that possible? How can anyone take this moron seriously? And how? France is going to make the world great again. He can't even get slime off his streets. This is the same guy that said French citizens have to accept Islamic terrorism as part of their daily lives. And he's going to make the world great again. And he's committed to this false narrative of global warming and climate change. Yeah, because he's up to his eyeballs in the European Union. He's up to his eyeballs in with the globalists. He is like, I don't know who's going to look like a bigger puppet? Merkel or Macron 5 years from now? Who's going to look like the biggest stooge, I wonder? So, yeah, he's committed. And what is he going to succeed at? He's going to succeed at destroying France once and for all. But here's what's going to happen. When other countries see how great America is doing again by not having these false regulations on our companies, when our natural resources aren't being manipulated falsely to show false carbon prints and all this other crap, when America is flourishing, and I mean really flourishing, other countries are going to stand up and say, you know what? I want some of that. Maybe this climate crap and all this regulations and carbon taxes and all this other nonsense, maybe it really is garbage. And you know, the leaders know that. It's the people of the world that have to figure it out. And when enough of them get pissed off, like we Americans got pissed off this last November, you're going to see a lot of countries pulling out of this counterfeit accord. It's a bunch of nonsense. Now, I don't know who's a bigger idiot, this Macron guy or Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah, I said that, DiCaprio, because he's really full of crap. Now, he's one of these Hollywood idiots that have been pushing this climate change stuff. And, you know, we've got a big carbon footprint, and, you know, we're overusing our natural resources, and what can we do to save the planet? Well, here's a guy who once flew over 8,000 miles on a private jet just to pick up an environmental award. Okay? He flew 8,000 miles on a private jet. Now, I wonder how much oil and fuel was used. I wonder what the level of carbon emissions were from his private plane during that 8,000-mile trip. Shortly after Trump made his announcement in the Rose Garden yesterday, DiCaprio tweeted, "Today our planet suffered. It's more important to take action." Now, why is that? How does one country pulling out of this cockamamie accord destroy the world? How is that possible? So, it's unlikely that DiCaprio himself will be taking any action if that means curbing his own carbon-belching luxury celebrity lifestyle. Yeah, like Al Gore, who happens to consume 10 times the American national average on energy. I doubt that Gore is going to take personal action either. So again, expanding on that, last year, the Oscar winner took a round trip of 8,000 miles on a private jet from Cannes, however you pronounce it, to New York and back again to collect an honor from a clean water advocacy group. You cannot make this stuff up. After flying on another private jet to attend the Soccer World Cup in Brazil in 2014, DiCaprio stayed on a 470-foot yacht owned by oil billionaire Sheikh Mansour bin Zayed Al Nahyan, whatever. Watch this, folks. The yacht uses fuel equal to 83 American households' annual worth of CO2 emissions. Okay, folks? 1 yacht uses the fuel equal to 83 American households annually in CO2 emissions. Right. Hey, Hollywood, France, and you other con artist elitists, you want to take action? You want to make the planet great again? How about you scale back on some of your luxurious living? Oh, no, no. Can't have that. Can't have that. No, no. We the people have to cut back, or we have to pay more taxes, because how dare we live like 21st century human beings? How dare we? After being entertained by the oil billionaire, DiCaprio attended a People's Climate March in New York, where he protested against, you guessed it, the oil industry. See, you're not going to get this, folks, on Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC. No. You're going to get this from Infowars.com, Project Veritas, Mike Cernovich, World News Daily, WND.com, and then you're going to get it from real small people like me that Alex Jones has asked people like me, create your own YouTube channel, create your own podcast, and spread the word, and I'm doing that as best I can. You're not going to find this stuff anywhere on your television screen. It's not going to happen. So, continuing with this individual, During his Oscar-winning speech, DiCaprio decried global warming as the most urgent threat facing our entire species. Well, I guess he didn't feel too threatened flying all over the world on his private jets and drinking champagne and doing God knows what else on that 470-foot yacht that its CO2 emissions equal that to 83 American households every year. I guess that wasn't on his mind, was it? This was after the actor had taken no less than 6 private jet trips from New York to LA in just 6 weeks. He also took a private jet from LA to Las Vegas and stayed in Vegas for just 8 hours to attend a party before flying all the way back again. Seriously? And this guy is telling us now how the world has suffered because Trump doesn't want we the American people screwed by jackasses and liars like this? See if I'll ever go to another DiCaprio movie again. See, that's where we've got to hit these people, ladies and gentlemen. We got to hit them right in their wallet. You see, I think we too should save the planet. But you know what? Instead of bending over to scam tactics like carbon taxes and being suckered into believing that we're wasting our natural resources and that we have to sit in the dark or we have to have our thermostats at 65 degrees and freeze to death. Now, how about this? How about we do the right thing and stop financing Hollywood, and maybe we should stop buying certain imports from certain countries like France that are pulling this scam on their people. And maybe if we take money out of their pockets, they can't go on these yachts and they can't take all these private jet trips. And maybe we'll just save the planet. What do you think about that? Leo was so worried about global warming that just months after his Oscar speech, he got his celebrity friends to fly 6,000 miles from L.A. to Saint-Tropez so they could listen to a speech on, yeah, global warming. And there's more. Leo's 2000 movie, The Beach, was made at the cost of a precious ecosystem in Thailand being completely ruined. As part of his environmental activist rebrand, DiCaprio also complains about overfishing, a passion that didn't prevent him from serving his guests whole sea bass, having flown them all on CO2 belching helicopters at an event where a film was screened about, you guessed it, overfishing. This is really fantastic. This is a great article. Let's see. DiCaprio has even lambasted by environmentalists like Robert Rapier, who accused the actor of living a lifestyle that diminishes his moral authority to lecture others on reducing their own carbon emissions. Yeah, you think? DiCaprio represents everything that's wrong with today's virtue-signaling Hollywood elite. They lecture ordinary Americans about their lifestyle to earn entertainment industry brownie points while living extravagant, luxury, carbon-spewing lifestyles themselves. I think people like DiCaprio can go to hell. And I think libtards really need a serious wake-up call, and especially teachers when they're in their classrooms and they're teaching young, impressionable children that mommy and daddy are destroying the planet and that we're going to burn up and all the poor seals and the polar bears and all these other precious animals are dying because of global warming, which is a complete fallacy. And I think that, you know, parents really, really need to take charge of what their children are learning. And they really, you liberals got to get a wake-up call, seriously. Because you are being totally duped. totally duped by these people. So I'm just going to do an end-around play and go back to France real quick. So back to Macron. So quickly, he wants to take Donald Trump's line and one-up it, and he wants to make the world great again, whereas he should just focus on France. I want to bring in and close the show with Paul Joseph Watson did a fantastic piece on the truth about this bogus refugee crisis. There is not a refugee crisis. What we have here is we have a New World Order, globalist elite, Muslim migration flood bent on destroying these individual countries and honestly making a one world order. So I'm going to play this clip. It's 12 minutes long. It is fantastic. You're going to love it.
This is the shocking truth behind the Syrian refugee crisis that has been hidden from the public. Those boatloads of Africans you see on their way to Europe, yeah, well, for one, they're not coming from Syria, the clue being that they're African, and two, they're not refugees. They've not been rescued off the coast of Italy. Governments and aid agencies want you to believe that these people have struggled in flimsy fishing boats and dinghies to make it all the way across the Mediterranean. That's total BS. This is the insane reality of what's actually happening. The migrants pay people smugglers €1,500 each. They're not destitute refugees. The people smugglers then transport the migrants to a position just 12 miles off the coast of Libya. Just 12 miles. They then send out a distress call and the migrants are picked up by EU and NGO vessels. It's literally a taxi service straight to Europe. As the Spectator's Nicholas Farrell exposes, there's reason to suspect that the people smugglers are actually in direct contact with aid agencies, which is why they're so often first on the scene to rescue migrant boats. And this is a criminal offence. The law states that the refugees should be taken to the nearest safe port, which would be Tunisia. But these NGOs are taking them straight to Italy. As you can see in this marinetraffic.com illustration, the NGO boats are leaving Italy, travelling to right off the coast of Libya, just off the coast, then returning to Italy with their human cargo. It's literally a taxi service. And isn't it ironic that the only time these boats are diverted from Sicily is when G7 elitists are in town? It's a security threat for them to be faced with the very crisis they created. An investigation in Italy found that most of the NGO ships are German. Even the EU border agency Frontex accused aid agencies of helping, quote, criminals achieve their objectives. The people smugglers contact the aid agencies directly, knowing they won't be arrested. Quote, since June 2016, many boats have been rescued near the Libyan coast by aid.
Just want to interject real quick. Paul Joseph Watson mentioned Germany, that they're coming in on German boats. Well, let's look at the byproduct of these German boats bringing in these North Africans into Europe. Again, coming from Infowars.com. The trial of a Kurdish man who tied one of his three wives to the back of a car and dragged her through the streets of a town in Lower Saxony has drawn attention to an outbreak of Muslim honor violence in Germany. Honor violence, ranging from emotional abuse to physical and sexual violence to murder, is usually carried out by male family members against female family members who are perceived to have brought shame upon a family or clan. You feminists must love that, right? Offenses include refusing to agree to an arranged marriage. How dare they? Entering into a relationship with a non-Muslim. Well, there's diversity for you. Or someone not approved by the family. Refusing to stay in an abusive marriage. Take your beating like a woman and like it, or else. Or living an excessively Western lifestyle. You mean not wearing a beekeeper suit? You mean actually getting into a car on your own and driving somewhere? Or actually meeting some girlfriends for lunch or dinner? You mean like that kind of a Western lifestyle? I am sure that these feminists fully agree that Islam is one of the most beautiful religions on earth, isn't it? In practice, however, the lines between crimes of honor and crimes of passion are often blurred, and any challenge to male authority can elicit retribution, which is sometimes staggeringly brutal. Yeah, like a woman could get stoned to death if she cries that she was raped, but can't get two men to swear yes to it. Think about that. On May 22nd, a court in Hanover heard how a 39-year-old Turkish-born Kurd named Nurettin B attempted to murder his second wife, Kadir K, 28, after she asked him to provide financial support for the 2-year-old son. How dare she ask for a father to pay for his child? Awful. State prosecutor Ann Christian Froelich reconstructed Nurettin B's actions. So, I'm not going to go into the details there. I think that's enough. But, see, that's the byproduct of bringing these barbarians into our civilized countries. You get instances like this. So I wanted to bring that in. So back to Paul Joseph Watson.
Agency vessels without any prior distress call, suggesting the rendezvous has been prearranged. Italian prosecutor Carmelo Zaccaro says he has evidence of phone calls between criminal people smugglers and NGOs like Save the Children, Proactiva Open Arms, and SOS Mediterranean. George Soros, Open Society-backed foundations like Avaz.org, Medicine Sans Frontiers, and MoveOn.org are also allegedly involved. Soros invested $500 million to, quote, help refugees, some of which is going straight to these NGOs. ISIS is also offering migrants free passage through the Mediterranean if they join the terror group. So in some cases, they're actually footing the bill for these migrants to pay the people smugglers, who in turn are in communication with the NGOs. This is a complete scandal and a huge security threat, yet virtually nobody knows that this is the primary method by which refugees are pouring into Europe. Just 2.65% of migrants arriving in Italy are awarded asylum status. They're not refugees. Half of them disappear on arrival and don't even claim asylum. Over 200,000 migrants are arriving in Italy alone via this method every single year. And that's only going to increase. If you think there'll come a point where the number of migrants pouring into Europe slows to a trickle, then think again. If we continue these disastrous policies, it's only going to get worse. Much worse. Africa's population is exploding. Look at the countries surrounding Libya. Niger's population is set to almost quadruple in the next 3 decades, from 20 million to 72 million. Chad's population is set to leap from 14 million to 35 million. Sudan is heading towards 80 million. Egypt, 152 million. Ethiopia, 189 million. Nigeria, 400 million. And I haven't even included those arriving from the Middle East. The character of a place is determined by the people who live there. You can't flood European cities with tens of millions of people from the Middle East and Africa and expect it to remain the same. Eventually, it's going to start to feel less like Europe and more like the Middle East and Africa. Look at what's happening in southern Italy, where these migrants are arriving. Once a holiday paradise, Sicily is now the scene of a turf war between the Italian mafia and African crime gangs. Listen to what the mayor of Palermo said. Quote, Palermo is no longer an Italian town. It's no longer European. You can walk in the city and feel like you're in Istanbul or Beirut. Palermo is a Middle Eastern town in Europe. In other countries, the evidence is pretty clear that this grand experiment in cultural enrichment isn't working. Migrants are responsible for 90% of shootings in Sweden. A report by Germany's Interior Ministry found that an extra 402,741 crimes were committed by migrants, with non-Germans accounting for 27.6% of total offences. 500,000 migrants in Germany are on welfare benefits. Gang rapes of girls and women are becoming commonplace. Women in Paris are now protesting against constant abuse and harassment by gangs of migrant men.
To demonstrate the kind of reaction they get from men, they visit a local cafe with a hidden camera. Before they even get inside, their presence seems to disturb the other clients. There are only men in here, and they're not very welcoming.
Le mieux c'est d'attendre dehors.
Pourquoi?
Ici, il y a que des hommes.
Bah, c'est pas grave, on vit dans un monde où il y a des hommes et des femmes. Ça vous dérange, vous?
Moi, c'est pour vous.
Non, pour moi.
The bar owner doesn't want to talk.
Ah bon?
The other customers, meanwhile, are uncomfortable.
Mais je m'en fous, on va se faire discrète, petite, dans un coin.
Il y a que des mecs dans ce café.
Mais comment, c'est normal qu'il y a que des mecs? Imagine que tu veux prendre un café avec une cousine, une amie, ta femme. Tu le... Non? Normal. Ta cousine, elle reste chez elle. Ah bon?
Elle fait ce qu'elle veut, mais pas avec moi. Ben voilà, dans ce café, il n'y a pas de mixité.
Mais est-ce que c'est normal?
À Sevran, on n'est pas à Paris.
Même à Sevran, c'est la France.
T'es dans le 93.
Et alors, le 80... Et alors?
À Paris, c'est des mentalités différentes. C'est comme en anglais.
For a woman, going into a bar here is breaking a taboo.
Murders by migrants are daily news. Even leftists who help migrants reach Italy admit that many of them support ISIS.
He said they were processing men, adults in their 30s, who all had phones with ISIS stuff on the phones. They were being separated when they were being handed over to the authorities with the information explaining that these guys, you know, had all this on their phones and what their ages were. And they were just being put, processed through. There was nothing, they weren't being separated out. They just all went through with everything else.
Germany and Italy are forcibly confiscating private property to house migrants. PostNord announced it would stop mail delivery to the migrant suburb of Rinkeby because it's too unsafe. And people who complain about any of this are being put on hate crime blacklists. Social media giants are censoring accurate reporting as hate speech. What's the solution to this crisis? Well, it isn't to pander to racism, xenophobia, or to resort to futile stunts and identitarian vigilantism. In fact, that only emboldens leftists and the institutions they control to pursue their policies with more vigour, prolonging their delusion that they have the moral high ground. You're also not going to convince reasonable-minded people by becoming right-wing social justice warriors. It just turns people off. Listen, the individual migrants aren't to blame for trying to escape to a better life. If I lived in a poverty-stricken African country, I'd try to do the same, and so would you. But again, that's economic migration. It's not refugees fleeing war-torn countries. It's fundamentally dishonest to call it a refugee crisis when it's not. 85% of migrants arriving in Italy are men. The vast majority of them are from countries that are not at war. But migrants didn't create this crisis. The political elite created it. Leftist NGOs created it. They created it because they fundamentally hate Western values and are quite prepared to destroy them to remain in power. Europe's loss of faith in its own achievements and culture. The continent's demographic collapse. This guilt-ridden self-immolation. This suicidal virtue signalling that led to Merkel to swing the borders wide open. It's all based on an existential crisis engineered by the leftist political elite, ensconced in ivory towers and luxury hotels, shuttled between banquets and private parties by their chauffeurs. They don't have to live amongst the societal crises that they create. They don't care about the impact millions of unassimilated migrants have on society or culture. They only care about power. They replaced what defined the West, rule of law, equality, with the empty platitudes of tolerance and diversity. And it's been catastrophic. The EU wants to force member states to accept more migrants. Macron is threatening sanctions on Poland for refusing to do that. The only solution is to turf out those political elites and prosecute the NGOs for their criminal activity. The solution is to provide incentives for these migrants to stay in their home countries. The solution is to push for a political settlement that unites Libya, something that's moving closer to fruition. A unification that empowers a single authority to plug the leak by arresting and jailing the people smugglers. This will also stop the flood of migrants from other African countries entering Libya in the first place. And if it's proven that members of NGOs have been coordinating with people smugglers arrest and jail them too. Don't incentivize people smuggling by allowing NGO boats to be on standby to ferry these migrants into Europe at the drop of a hat. Italy could be about to prosecute these aid agencies, and we need to keep the pressure up to ensure that happens. There's an election in Italy next year. Polls show Beppe Grillo's five-star movement with a slender lead over the ruling centre-left party. The five-star movement has called out NGOs for providing a taxi service to migrants. If they take power, the racket is over and the aid agencies will face prosecution. The flood of migrants into Europe from Libya will cease. France chose virtual national suicide by voting for Macron, but Italy still has an opportunity to save itself and possibly the rest of the continent by electing Beppe Grillo. Look, free speech protests are going to do F all to stop these migrants pouring in every day. Railing against the symptoms, railing against Islam, and hey, I'm guilty as charged for doing that. But it doesn't count for anything. We need to stop these boats. We need criminal prosecutions and a permanent change of policy. The cultural identity of Europe is already being eviscerated. This isn't about race. It's about the survival of our fundamental values and our way of life. We need to stop the bleeding now, before it's too late.
See, folks, that's the theme of this show today. Restoring and keeping our core values. What made Western Europe great? What made America great? Our values. And the leaders of Europe and America, and Trump is pending, are destroying that. And we the people, by and large, obviously not my audience and not me, but you know what, check that. In a way, we are standing by and letting it happen. Oh, sure, we're speaking out. Sure, we're joining groups and everything. And I'm doing this podcast Monday through Friday when, yeah, I could be doing other things before work, sure. But we're financing all of this stuff through our taxes. We're being complicit. And it's just the truth. So, when are we the people going to get it? When are we going to put enough pressure on our so-called leaders to do what Paul Joseph Watson said? Arrest these non-government organizations, they're called NGOs. Stop the influx of these people coming through North Africa and then into Western Europe, then ultimately into America. And I did not, and I will not get to how we have a similar crisis with another group of people on a southern border. I'll hold that over until Monday. But when are we going to start standing up for our core values? Well, we better start doing that now, and we better start teaching our young children what America was created on and what we stood for. And I'm going to be getting into that Monday, how our founding fathers viewed the one true God and Jesus Christ and how it influenced the forming of this country. It is very important that we get back to that station. We have to do it. We must do it. There's just no other way. Or that picture that you see for my show today, America is going to look like that too. My name is Michael B. This is Higher Truth Radio. No, it is not. This is the Truth Song. It used to be Higher Truth Radio. I had a brain cramp because my phone alarm went off. I got to get ready for work. I thank you for listening. We'll be back Monday, 10 a.m. Central Time.